You are now listening to FemRegard Podcast with Tessa Markle
and Carolina Alvarez.
Fem.
Hey, Fem Fam. We have another guest episode today with two lovely filmmakers who were recommended to us from our friend, Danielle Beckman. You guys, she's recommended several people to us. if you guys haven't listened to her episode from, was that last season that she was on?
Yeah, last season, season 14. She's amazing.
They all run together. But yeah, we love Danielle and we love her friends that she has sent to us. So today we are speaking to Didi Waki and Ben Myers, who are Didi is the producer and lead actress, and Ben is the director of A Lone Star Love, which is a short film that follows David, an Irish national, making his new home in Austin with the help of a social media android named Viva. When he meets Free Spirit and Texas Native, he must choose between his synthetic companion and a real-life romance. It's a really cool film, and especially for us with Sync, like, it kind of has the same theme with the, you know, advancing technology and the kind of dangers of social media in this near future world. So we were very pleased to see how, you know, it kind of aligns with our film, and they just did a really great job.
Yeah.
So we get to talk to them about that process and how they got it all together and made such a great end product.
Yeah, it was super great to dive in. I think you guys will get some great takeaways on just, again, the filmmaking process. That's what we love to share. And they were able to share some great little takeaways on how to, you know, film something out of state if you're, you know, not from there, and building together a team and the schedule, all those things that are super important. And for us, it's always trying to find the little nuances that everyone has into their process. I'm always so interested on, like, how do you build this? Because it is stressful, y'all. It is a lot. And we all know the prep, but it's like understanding everyone's process and what you can take away, I think is really fun. And, you know, they both were able to share some great gems. And it was just great to hear, you know, after seeing the film, like, kind of what they brought to it personally, and you can really just tell. So the film is out to watch now, so stay tuned to the end to hear where you can go see it today, and we hope you enjoy. We know you will.
First of all, shout out to Danielle Beckman. Beckman!
Yeah.
She is our girl. We love her. And so it was so great to get an email from you, Didi, about coming on. We're instant, like, yes, absolutely. Beckman approved. We're coming. we're going to chat. But also that, you know, it's incredible that you are able to self-fund a short film with the help, of course, the full team, which we'll get into. It is sci-fi romance. It is
Lone Star Love.
It's set in Austin. You have an Irish lead, which we're going to get into it. And so we're here today with your director as well, Benjamin. And let's first start off, Didi, about how you yourself as a producer actor came onto this project. And sure. Then we're going to ask you about how you and Benjamin got to connect and how he got brought on. So let's start with you.
Yeah, no worries. So Ronan and I were actually in an acting class in New York City. We studied at the HB studio, and we studied together like a couple different classes for a while, and we just ended up connecting, and we were, you know, assigned scenes together, and we started sharing like poetry and just random writing with each other. And eventually he was like, yeah, I have like some scripts I'm interested in, like, you know, whatever, eventually making something out of. And he had like six short film, or not even short film, they could have been plays too, but like six short scripts that we got a bunch of actors and we read them just to see how does it even sound, like, you know, out loud. And the one that everyone liked the most was A Lone Star Love. And at the time it was called Human Book, and it was like kind of a play on like Facebook. But people really liked it and resonated with it. So we were like, okay, if we're going to make anything happen, why don't we just make this one happen? And Ben and I actually ended up both doing a reading as actors for a new play. And we connected briefly after, and like, you know, we were all exchanging information with each other. And Ben and I barely actually spoke at that time, but we were like, cool. And I got his email and I looked on his website on like the signature, you know, on his email, and had a short that he had did on the website, and they had some like special effects to it and everything like that. And I was like, you know, there's something about this guy that I think I need to reach out. So I reached out to him and I was like, hey, I have this script. I would love just even your opinion on it. We're like, maybe like we, you know, he was a writer and producer and director. So we're like, I don't know if he wants to get involved or even like a perspective on it would be great. Yeah. And we ended up all getting drinks together. And by the end of the first meeting, we're like, okay, are we making, you know, Ben was like, I have, these are my opinions, you know, and they were all very valid. And when we talked about like production, it was, it became like, okay, well, we need a car, this and that, and all these things. We're like, I was like, well, you know, we could do it in Austin, you know? And he was like, well, I'm actually, that's really intriguing to me to film somewhere I've never filmed before. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of ended up, you know, we shook hands and started making a movie.
I love that, because so many people, we get that advice a lot, that it's like, why don't you go film somewhere outside of LA? And, you know, it's like, it's kind of a catch 22, because, you know, we have all of our resources here. A lot of like all right. the people we know are based here. Right. But then you do get that beautiful, like you get to film somewhere that it's, you don't have to try to fake LA for another city, you know, right? And you're going to save a lot of money and you have the chance to meet local talent and crew and everything there. So I always, I'm always intrigued when people do do that, that are from LA and then go elsewhere to film.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Go ahead, Ben.
Well, I was going to say that that moment of that suggestion has really changed the whole character of the film, because there was nothing in the script at that time that had anything to do with Texas thematically or from a, just a plot standpoint.
Okay.
But when Dee Dee, you know, offered that suggestion, I was like, well, let's not just be down there. Let's build the film around that. Let's make it a feature, not a bug, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to ask Benjamin, what about the story intrigued you the most and got you excited to want to tell this story?
Well, as the script came to me, it really focused on the character of David, the sort of love triangle aspect with the character that our multi-talented producer Dee Dee plays, Layla, in the film, was not yet part of the project. And the thing that really struck me was the struggle that this younger male character was having with his relationship with social media and how it was sort of stunting his emotional growth. How he was hung up on his girlfriend and kind of having this stalkerish, incelish kind of point of view. And I thought, well, this is something that a lot of people are going to be able to relate to. So definitely those themes of the way technology intrudes into our lives. But I also, you know, in collaborating with Dee Dee on the script and further developing it, bringing it into Texas and ultimately bringing her in as an actress, I wanted the film to have broader legs than just this kind of incel point of view. And also there were some ideas initially in the script, even just at, on the face of it, the fundamental idea of having this feminized robot character that is having a dynamic with a male character. There's a lot of tropes and a lot of ideas that is fraught with that I think are not necessarily like helpful to where we are and the way we want to tell stories and recognize equality, not just how we treat people, but in the stories that we communicate.
Right.
So that's when I wanted to bring in this choice between this dynamic, this sort of incelish, sucked into my social media world dynamic, and the dynamic that Dee Dee's character brings, Layla, who is not about social media at all. It's very analog, warm character. And what I loved about Dee Dee was the same reason that she wanted to make this movie, because she agrees with the philosophy of the film. She doesn't even have social media, which is like now to promote the film, she's forced to jump on there, but she's true to herself in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, geez, we have someone that's so authentic and buys into this so much and is from Austin. So I was like, hey, let's bring you into the film. And I started writing a character for her, and she wrote some of the dialogue as well, to get that sense of authenticity, which is really what I was going for. So that's initially what drew me to the film and also drew me to kind of alter it slightly and bring it to a place that I thought was really respectful of all the female talent on the project, but also was saying something really relevant to the now.
Yeah. And I love too that saying how it's relevant to now, but it's got like some kind of like futuristic to it because of the Viva character, which for those of you listening is kind of like the AI that we were talking about. Because that's how our film is. It's set in the near future. And I remember they mentioned 2023, but I assume you made the film a year or two before, right?
Yeah.
So that was the near future at the time.
Exactly. But time moves pretty fast. And already looking in the last 6 months, all these stories about AI, like you can barely keep up these days.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, that's such a good, what's the word I want? That's such a good like idea to do because it makes it so relatable. Like it's not unbelievable that this Viva exists already in this world, you know? So it's a great way to like include those, the things that we don't have in real life yet, but we can imagine having, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did I didn't get to watch the full film, but the parts that I did see, that was something that just going back to the authenticity of Dee Dee's character, I did really feel how authentic it was for you. And I was curious about the writing. I was going to ask who wrote it because I just felt like everything your character said, it did feel like really natural and you played it. Yeah. So naturally and authentically. So you did a really great job with the scenes. I was like, oh, this is, it just feels so natural. So it's nice that, you know, you had the space to collaborate. I think as an actor, I think that's always fun, you know, to bring yourself to it.
No, 100%. And I definitely helped with the dialogue. Like when I've gotten compliments on the performance, I'm like, was I even acting, you know? Like, and you know, it's interesting with acting, just thinking, you know, I think my personal burden sometimes is, oh, if I'm not like fully immersed in a character that is completely different than me, then am I an actor? Like, does it count? Am I worthy? You know, I struggle with that. And then when I can, but you know, I think some great work comes from what you know and what you resonate with, because it's
absolutely
it's part of it for versus just like your head, you know? And so this, I mean, Ben definitely, I'm very grateful that Ben helped encourage, because initially I was going to just produce and I wasn't even like even thinking about acting, but I'm really glad that he
fought. Yes, and, Ben,
you know, it was great.
Love and that.
Working on so many scenes in acting school together already kind of had that rapport and everything. Like we're friends, you know, we've been friends for a long time. And yeah, but I just, some of those lines that come out, I'm like, yeah, I feel it to my core, you know, like just talking about social media being just so evil and everything. I'm like, yep, still feel that. That's still
for me. We are all aligned here on the messaging. I mean, that is exactly what our film is talking about. It's centered around the ever-evolving technology that we have that we can't even keep up with and how invasive it is, especially our character. It centers around toxic female friendships versus like relationships, and really like goes into how intrusive that can be. And our technology is amped up with this new app to sync minds with one another. But if you just look at the social media you have today with Instagram, it's easy to stalk people. It's easy to like follow along and be, you know, a bad friend if you, you know, want to like just intrude on someone's life and make them feel bad all the time or whatever it could be, you know, shaming. It's just, it's already there. But I just love film as a medium to explore like in these heightened worlds that, again, I think for both of our stories are, it's just not that far off from what we experience today. What about doing that? What was the biggest, I would say, like hurdle in trying to captivate a world that isn't so far away and to today? Was there anything, I mean, just trying to make it believable that you found challenging? I'd be curious to see as we head towards our feature.
I think, you know, articulating the Viva character was a point there, and there were several things we did. First of all, casting Annetta Berning, who plays that character so well, who was part of the reading that Didi and Ronan originally put together.
Yeah, she
and
kills it.
Being brought onto the project as a director, you know, you can come in. When I come into a project, sometimes I come in various phases. Sometimes it's very early. Sometimes, you know, a lot of the team is together. In this instance, you know, Didi was quite insistent that Annetta was the right way to go. And again, as I mentioned, you know, approaching some of these tropes, I was like, well, maybe we should explore a non-binary performer take on this role. So we're kind of bypassing the whole idea of gender. But when I met Annetta, and when I heard her do the read, I was like totally blown away. And so having the performance there to conceive of that and asking her all to do this, all these fun tricks, like kind of speaking as someone else, it gave her an opportunity to kind of really show her gifts as an actor and not just trap her in this robotic kind of performance. So, you know, having her nail that performance, and then also the VFX, the components of this screen that appears, it's an idea that we're all kind of familiar with. Like we're kind of used to seeing this in popular cinema, but it's also something that, like, gosh, I'm just 5 seconds away from having off my phone.
Yeah.
And then realizing Viva's pink eyes.
That was cool. I really liked that feature.
It's a subtle little thing, and props goes to our DP and colorist, Nicholas Richter, for taking on that extra challenge. Because it's all done in DaVinci by changing the color. We discussed maybe doing like contact lenses, but we came to the conclusion like you would kind of lose the depth in the eye if you did that. And that helps you relate to her more. And it just kind of creates, you know, fully creates the illusion. Now it's a smaller budget project. And one of the things that we had to let go of for time constraints and budget was we wanted to, you know, this is a pricey, it's like the fanciest iPhone 15 you can get, right? And he's like a first adopter because it's a big like masculine flex. Like, look, I've got this great thing. So we're assuming maybe not everybody has these yet, but they're definitely around. So one thing we didn't get to achieve in the film that we would have liked to is seeing other Vivas with people, you know, kind of around just to kind of help, even though we're telling a small story, just kind of help open up the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, we shot the film in the beginning of 2020. The film was set in 2023. Now here we are. There are, you can basically have a Viva now if you want, between AI technology and the robotics technology that we have. The question, of course, is should we?
Always should the question.
Yeah. But yeah, so those are the kind of things that we tackled to try to sell that futuristic world, that near future world in that way. And you know, some other lingo and things around that might have been like just the way culture has shifted and changed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I really want to get into that. I was telling Carolina selfishly for our own purposes, we want to hear more about the VFX involved in that. But before that, I also want to mention, like, I think when you were talking about you weren't sure if you should do the Viva as like a non-binary character, how that would work. I think that it did really work to make it a woman and an attractive woman, because then you're wondering as the audience, like, wait, is he gonna try to get with her? Like, what, you know, and it plays off his like kind of inability to connect on this date and in real life. And it just adds more layers to that. So I think that kind of it worked in your favor to go in that direction.
Well, I will just say to that, like, because people are more aware of that conversation around these issues, I think it also adds an extra layer of meta jeopardy. You're sitting there nervous, like, oh, not only what's going to happen, but what are these filmmakers going to do? And we, you know, certain things we put on Ronan, you know, there's a scene, he's in the bedroom at night and he's asking, he's, you know, going to maybe get intimate with her. His shirt's off. She is fully clothed. There's an instance later where you think like, well, he's taking all his anger out on her. Is he going to visit violence upon this character? No, he does not. He kind of punishes himself in that way, metaphorically, you know? So I think
that's dark.
right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that like by not only you create these moments of tension, but also like you make the, wait, are we going to be watching this kind of male gaze point of view? And are we going to do things that are going to make me uncomfortable? And that's almost the same feeling of like, wait, is the monster going to pop out behind the door? So it kind of plays on the audience on these two different levels.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's almost like one of those, it's kind of subconscious, you know, for the audience, because yeah, you're building that tension. And while the audience is questioning what's going to happen next, they're not like quite realizing where the tension is even coming from, really, beyond that. So it's yeah, an interesting approach for sure. And it works.
Yeah. And Dee Dee, what was it like for you playing in this world? And I we already spoke about how authentic it was for you to relate to your character, like non-social media wise, but yeah, just as a whole, like what were some challenges for you or things that you really like just felt like propelled you more into the character?
You know, it's, I think part of it, like having, I was born and raised in Austin, and like the extra, like we filmed in my parents' house, you know? And
oh,
so
wow.
So it was like my parents' house. There's a party scene that was like the big house that was my friend's house. And mm-hmm. She played the character in the film. She plays Ben's wife in that. So it was a lot of like familiar, like it's a world I'm like, I grew up in, you know, hey. It's like, I know Texas, I know Austin specifically. And so, and I think one of the core characteristics of Austin, I mean, it's fading, unfortunately, as it's getting more popular as a destination, but Austin is like supposed to be like a down to earth place, mm-hmm. you know, like a haven for hippies in the 60s and like a giant conservative state, you know, it's like people just wanted to chill out and play music and get high and whatever. And yeah. So like thinking about, and now the way Austin has gone, I think people that have grown up in Austin and have seen the insane changes that have happened in the past 20, 30 years, a huge tech industry has boomed in Austin. And it's taking away the soul and core of Austin. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think that the place, like the soul of a city is reflected in the artists that it keeps. And when you make it possible for artists to live there, you lose the soul a bit, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's what happens in Austin. So it's happening. I know it. I know my friends that are artists that can't afford to live there anymore, you know, and it's same thing with New York. It's same thing with LA. It's same thing with a lot of cities. And it's very sad, but I think in our world specifically, thinking about the, I guess, juxtaposition of this new technology while you have a character like me that's trying to maintain that soul, you know, mm-hmm. trying to maintain the down to earth, just be present, dude. Like my yeah. God, technology in our lives every minute of every freaking day. You use your phone to go on Google Maps to drive to somewhere. You can't even drive anywhere normally, you know, yeah. You go on the subway in New York anywhere without like, oh, where am I going? What subway station? Like there's really no disconnecting from it. So for me, that aspect of the world of like brand new technology invading while I'm trying to like counteract, and it was very easy to get into. And I think Austin was like the perfect backdrop for that story, because it is what's happening to the city as we speak, you know?
Yeah,
that is really well put. And on a level, like I didn't think like connect, like I'm noticing it from LA, and I listened to a bunch of podcasts and everyone's talking about moving to Austin and like, and yeah. the news about tech companies, like, yeah, building their main stations there. So it's just interesting to think about in a way of like how, yeah, it in those tech valley zones of certain cities, you do feel an emptiness that is not there when you have like artists living in those quarters. It's, I never like really put the two and two together, but you're absolutely right. And like, that's an interesting like theme to definitely play on. And I love that, you know, Austin really worked out to your favor for the story's sake. It really, yeah, it sounds like the perfect setting, and that it was so close to home for you. It is home for you. That. Yeah. It's like, yeah, hi, here's my city. Like, yeah. This is what we do. Yeah, that was really, a great way of putting it. I didn't connect the two before quite so well. So I love that.
And yeah. I will say to Dee Dee's performance, you know, Yes, you're saying like it'd be great if I would, you know, had a mustache and an eye patch and you know, hobbling along or something. But I mean, the things that really and Dee Dee's had her work recognized. She won Best Actress Award at Studio City Film Festival in Los Angeles.
Let's go, girl.
But I think the things that really make her performance that really draws you in are those moments of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Because you know, Dee Dee's a tough cookie. You know, she is a make things happen kind of gal. And there are a couple moments in the film, early on in the film, when he says, "Hey, I don't have any cash. Can you pay for drinks?" And she's like a little like, "Oh, this is the kind of date I'm on." you know, when the whole kerfuffle happens at the end with my character and you know, it realizes that she has said something to David's character that he says in an inappropriate time. Her hurt when she looks over at her brother after that. Those are the moments that, because these are the micro things that I think people can really relate to. Mm-hmm. And the vulnerability that she showed in there. You know, that's really what I need from an actor, you know, far beyond from, you know, I mean, I come down there and I'm putting on a Texas accent and wearing a hat and all that stuff. But the real work and stuff is just being honest and being vulnerable and being committed to the moment. And that, I think that's what makes her performance so strong.
Absolutely. And I think too, you have that kind of juxtaposition again, like with the Viva character, who is literally a robot, you know, but sometimes I feel like the audience can forget that because unless you're looking at her eyes, you know, it's like she's just a woman, you know, and especially when she's like reading the posts that for his social media, when she's reading them, you know, like a human and less robotic and stuff. So you've got like that's like literally a robot. And then you've got Dee Dee's character who is, she's got so many layers to her and, you know, we get to see like her vulnerability and all of that. So I think kind of those like playing off of each other, even though they never really interact, it's a cool juxtaposition of characters. Yeah.
Well, Dee Dee, we talked about like the contrast and the contradictions in your character. I remember you were being very interested in, like, you know, she talks this big game in the beginning about, you know, social media and stuff like that, and her kind of being like too cool for school. Mm-hmm. But then we talked about this moment in developing the script where she asks to take a picture with him on their second date. You know what I'm talking about, Dee Dee, right? Like that's that idea of contradiction, you know, in her.
I mean, I contradict myself in real life all the time where I'm like, I'm so not into like smartphones. Like I'm so pure. And then I, again, Google mapping a route that I've done 30 times, you know, I'm like, it's so easy to do that. It's so easy to be hypocritical when it's like, because I feel like with smartphones and technology and social media and all that, it's like, it's such a necessary evil right now, you know, like it's so like, how would anybody right now in day and age just have a flip phone? You'd have to be rich, like really rich, be able to like have that luxury of being disconnected. Like it's a luxury. It's either you're living off the land in the middle of nowhere, or you're like, if you're in a city, you already have a driver. You don't have to Uber, you know, you don't have to app. Like you don't have like, you don't have to worry about Zelling somebody. You always have cash on you. Like, I don't know. I don't even know what that world looks like nowadays. But yeah, I mean, I contradict myself. And I think there is that hypocrisy in her character too. And yeah, I get annoyed with it too. Sometimes I'm looking at, when I watch that performance, I'm like, Layla, shut up. Like, you're being annoyed, you know?
But it's real, you know? I mean, I feel like we all contradict ourselves at times. And we're all just like kind of trying to keep up in this world and have some sense of humanity still. And it's tough.
Well, for me, the way I look at it is that it's not like all tech is bad. And that's something I like put out there when I talk about our film. It's just to what point is it just too much that we're not even like, we're losing the human part of it, and like ourselves like entirely, because there shouldn't be like anything wrong with you wanting to take a photo of a moment to like have a more lasting memory. That is a beautiful thing that we can experience. But if it's like to the point where, you know, you're taking photos of every single second and entirely not being, you know, present for your Instagram story, then it's like, that's to me like where the issue is. So it's just like, to me, it's interesting to play at what points is it like, okay, you know what? That's like not, that's a different issue when it comes mm-hmm. to tech than like it as a whole and how it has helped us as like a society in many ways. At least that's where my gaze on it is. I just think it's totally. Like a certain point where it's like, okay, this is too much. Like we can't function, to your point, Dee Dee, like without it. And I do think about that. Like we are going to that. So to that world where it's like, if you don't have XYZ and you can't afford XYZ, like you're screwed. Which, you know, that's a whole nother issue.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you in this thing that there's no such thing to me as like all good, all bad, you know?
Right. No. It's
so rarely black and white.
But it's fun to have characters who are black and white about it. That's the thing. Like that's part of the juice in film, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with
that. Yeah. By the way, guys, something that is keeping me present this morning, because we're recording early morning and keeping me awake is my Magic Mind Elixir
I
do have it out. I'm literally drinking it right now. Like this is not just, you know, a paid ad. It's real, guys. So listeners, I just want to let you guys know because this has been a really cool thing that I just discovered. And it is essentially like a boost for my day because it's got matcha, which is like a way better caffeine than coffee. It keeps me going all day. You know, I don't get that crash. I don't get those jitters. It's got a whole bunch of great like mushroom based stuff in it as well. So it's like a stress reliever and anxiety reliever. Also helps with inflammation and helps support cognition. Like there's so much stuff that this Magic Mind does. And it actually tastes really good. And it's in this tiny little bottle. So I can just take it to go whenever I want. Like it's been really cool.
You're not going to do a shot right now. On camera?
I mean, I absolutely am going to do a shot right now. Like, should I get really close to the mic when I swallow so everybody can hear it?
Yeah, actually, we would, like, love that.
Nope. But listeners, I just want to share this with you, too, because we have a little special code for you to get a discount if you want to try it yourself. The Magic Mind team created this offer for us to share with you. You can get up to 56% off, even better, your first subscription in the next 10 days and 20% off with the one-time purchase with the one-time code purchase, FemmeRegard. So FemmeRegard. And you can get that at magicmind.co/FemmeRegard. So when you redeem this code, FemmeRegard, hurry up because the 56% discount only lasts 10 days after this episode airs.
Hi, friends. I'm David Berman, and for 16 years, I performed over 300 fake autopsies on CSI, Crime Scene Investigation.
And I'm John Wellner, and I, too, was on CSI for 12 years, playing the toxicologist Henry Andrews.
John and I are so excited to introduce CS I Love You, a podcast dedicated to all things CSI, both the show, but more importantly, we'll talk to the heroic criminalists behind America's favorite crime drama. So pull up a chair and join us as we talk about murder, mayhem, and mystery.
It's CS I Love You.
So how long were you guys in production for this short film as a whole?
We shot 5 days.
Amazing.
5 days of production. We had a sixth day that was kind of a contingency day. It was also kind of built in as a free day for people to enjoy Austin. We did take advantage of that morning. We had a little bit of issue with our lead actress, took ill the last evening of our shooting. And we actually got really creative because our fabulous AC, I looked over at her and I was like, you know, your hair is kind of the same color and da-da-da-da-da-da. Lo and behold, there are I think one or two shots in the script where we kind of are behind the head shot where our AC is stepping in for Annetta. So five full days with a little bit of a half a scene in the morning time.
Nice.
Amazing. I think that's really smart to have a contingency day. I'm currently breaking down the script, trying to figure out a loose schedule. And I'm wondering, you know, again, what we can afford with their budget, but also like, you know, you're pouring all your efforts in. It would be a shame if like you didn't have a backup plan or strategy to like make everything work. So I think that's a really great tip, I would say, to our filmmakers who are building. Anything else scheduling wise that both of you would recommend doing? Producer, we're putting on our producer hats now.
No, I mean, they were long days. We had a lot of locations. Like they were.
Oh, yeah, you did.
It's really about finding like the team that's, you know, willing to just go with it. You know, I got so lucky with the team that we had. And luckily we were like sleeping at my house, like all of us, you know, like people sharing beds, like the AC was sharing a bed with my sister, like in that. And it was a very much, you know, one of those productions. But I think we went over like almost every day, like by an hour that we anticipated, or maybe even 2 hours. And our crew was just like the best, and they were just so adaptable, you know, and
that's,
they're like
really special.
So can we please, you know, like just a little bit longer? And they were just so adaptable and so great. So I think that's part of it. But as far as like scheduling like that, I think Ben has it right with definitely, I guess it depends on how long your script is, you know, and how many locations you have and everything. Like we had 5 days and that was good. You know, we could have done it in 5 days if Annetta hadn't become ill, honestly, but worked out.
Yeah. You know, those company moves, they really eat time into the day. You know, I think it was maybe just one day where we didn't have a company move.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to underestimate what that means for your cast and crew and how much time it kind of needs, not just the actual travel time, but how much time it needs to travel on either end. So, but you know, that's a trade-off, right? It's a challenge that you handle in production. But for us, it really showed up on screen. It made our 25-minute short feel really beefy and luxurious in that way. And we got to show all over Austin, and Austin being a character was kind of a feature of the project. So I mean, we could have pared down locations, killed the company moves. For maybe you're going to have more time to get the shot, but you know, it's definitely a balance in that way. And I will say another challenge, because the project was remote, says myself and Dee Dee and Ronan and our first AD, Muhammad, our DP, Nicholas, and Annetta. I think that was the whole team. We're traveling from New York to Austin, and the rest of the crew Dee Dee hired locally. So we had some flexibility there, but we didn't want to bring people back to Texas. That becomes, it's not just like, oh, let me go back down to Bushwick and see if I can get this apartment again. Right, you know, right. let me go to North Hollywood and see if I can just pop by that street corner again. Right. It means like getting everybody over there. So we really, I really want to make sure we got everything in. So building in that contingency day, both for sanity, so that people could take a second and feel the accomplishment of all the hard work they put in, but also having just a little bit of opportunity. If something went wrong or we needed to push something, that contingency day. Now that's a luxury that you may not be able to build into your process. Part of it for us is we had a core team of people that was dedicated, and they were going to be there until their flight left. So they were kind of we were kind of captive in that way. But you can't always afford a contingency day. But the scariest thing is thinking you're not, you know, planning on trying to get everything, and then realizing you're not going to be able to get everything, and then having to figure out a reshoot that you didn't plan on. That's always tough for budget and for time. And then maybe you lose an actor. Maybe you lose location in those times that change.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for breaking that down. And that is definitely, yeah, something I'm fearful about shooting out of state or something, because it's like, if you don't get it all, that is definitely like a risk that you run. But it sounded, I love what Dee Dee said about having a team that is flexible and willing to just go there and support. And I think that is probably the most important thing for us and why we've started hiring our key team members like way before we were even like fully funded. We're like, we are finding the right people who care about the project, that, you know, understand our vibe and what we care about, and are going to be like the people that, yeah, you literally wake up next to in the morning and are ready to, you know, go to war, or so to speak. But yeah, like, you know, that, but that's what makes it those days, like the challenges, like you could figure it out. Like, and mm-hmm. that's the, I'm of the mindset, like, you know, plan for everything and everything could fall apart and you're going to just figure it out and it's going to be fine. Like, that's just how it goes. That's how it goes.
Yeah. And we also had like every night, myself and Didi, Nick, the DP, and Muhammad, we had a big scheduling powwow where we just mm-hmm. reviewed everything for the next day, make sure there were no issues that we were not aware of, make sure everybody was all on the same page, where we could take time, where we're going to be in crunch time, where we could find ways to get ahead and just be mindful of that. I mean, you obviously want everybody to do their best work. You don't want to rush the lighting. You don't want to rush the actors. But if you look at it and say, hey, you know what? In the morning, we can get ahead in the office. It's really going to help us out in the afternoon. So let's find ways to do that. So just having that check-in with the core team about what are we definitely doing the next day and not letting it be. Yeah. It just, it puts a little bit time, and it's not something I wouldn't necessarily schedule that, because I mean, turnaround times are super important in a production, making sure everybody's rested, especially if you go day after day, you're not just shooting a 1 or 2 day project, you're shooting a feature over multiple weeks, respecting people's time and keeping it for safety reasons. But for the core team who is invested and they're ride or die, having that little 45 minute hour long powwow to just everybody's on the same page about what needs to get done the next day and where our challenges are, that was super helpful.
Mm-hmm. That's another, that's a really great other takeaway, Ben. Thank you for sharing that. And definitely something we'll lock in. Because it's the worst feeling when you show up and you're like, okay, and what? Like, what's happening? you just want to always be like, everyone's on the same page. So that's, And you said for safety reasons too, that totally makes sense. Let's talk about when you guys finally wrapped and you got the editing done. I'm curious, for the VFX that you guys used, just going back to that, was that was it something you had to consult before you were shooting and make sure, you know, your framing, the motion of the shots were like in order? Or were you able to find a VFX person after that, like was able to adapt what you had already shot and make it come to life? Just curious.
That's all Ben.
Well, we definitely took it Texas style. It was like riding a bucking bronco. We did not do what you're supposed to do, which is bring a VFX or a special effects coordinator on in advance, have a conversation with your DP. We did not do that. I knew some things and I had some conversations with the DP about how we might be approaching some of this stuff. One of those things is a simple, so basically the main special effects feature in the project is that Viva closes her eyes, she makes eye contact with her subject, she opens her eyes, and as she opens her eyes, a sort of projected two-dimensional but 3D hologram screen appears between the two of them, and it's a way to kind of create intimacy. The very first day we shot that kind of scene, I was very safe about it. Mm-hmm. I had the cameras locked down, a static shot is a lot easier to add special effects into. And I was like, okay, we'll just do this. We'll do it like that. We'll keep it safe. And to augment what we knew would be there, and we already had this sort of theme going with her pinkish purple eyes, so we kind of knew what kind of color this display would be. We had our gaffer rig up a light that's over top, just in between the two subjects. And we just Hollywooded with a flag where the light was being covered. And then that was taken away right in synchronous movement with Annetta closing and opening her eyes, so that as her eyes open, it's like the light is turning on. And now you have in-camera effect of a light that is actually illuminating your actors. So you get all, now, I mean, like Marvel, they can put lights anywhere and it's totally not an issue. But for us, it was going to be a lot more work to do that. So at least we knew we had that in there.
Smart.
But then give a mouse a cookie, you know, as I go along in the shoot, I'm getting more brazen, like, okay, well, why don't we do this, but handheld? We can do this handheld, right? It'll be fine. Ultimately, we brought on the gentleman that I've been meaning to work with for many number of years after working on a TV production, a home renovation show. His name is Eric Roediger, and he took on the initial design. Unfortunately, he had to step away from the project for health reasons, but we were very, very, very grateful for his work. Nick Richter, again, stepped in and completed that work. But I would say that, like, the main challenge was knowing what you don't know. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, but you kind of know that space of the kind of challenges that you're going to be in for. And then for me and for Didi as well, and Ronan, as we reviewed things, making sure things pass the sniff test. Is this going to look real? Is this looking hokey? Do we need to back this off? Do we need to become less ambitious as we work this stuff? Are all the angles lining up? Is there a reality to this? And if it wasn't doing that, even if it was something more fantastic that we wanted, we pared it down so that the illusion was complete and selling there. But, you know, I think that what you ought to do is, as early on, if it's a VFX heavy project, and you're going to be capturing stuff that is meant for post-production, it's going to be working on as early as possible, as early as you bring on your director of photography, bring on, maybe if it is just the single person that's doing your effects and post, if there's somebody that's kind of working with a team, because there's all kinds of questions to answer, not just how it's going to integrate with production on the day, but also, you know, this was a new prospect for me. I did the post-production management, but like, how does this integrate with color? Where does our workflow go? How does this we're good on sound design, but there's some final element here that's not going to come in. That's going to, so communicating with all the department heads in post and making sure that, every aspect of what the VFX was didn't get lost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was my central focus, when it came to that stuff in post-production.
Are you willing to share also with our listeners kind of about what your like VFX budget ended up being in the end? Because if they haven't watched the film yet, you know, it's not super VFX heavy, but it is in several scenes. So it's, you know, it is involved. So I'm just kind of curious to see what that runs to give people an idea of that.
In this instance, I think it's a difficult question because we had so much sweat equity mm-hmm. that was involved. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, Didi, I want you to speak on this, but, you know, I approached Didi at the beginning. I said, how is this being financed? What do you want to do? Having through some experience before, I presented her some options. Here's different paths we can take. What do you, as, you know, the executive producer on this, someone that the film wouldn't happen without, how do you want to go about doing it? And she brought her Texas philosophy to it. And she was like, well, we're going to just fund it ourselves. Okay. All right. Well, there's limitations there. But basically, in terms of what people were paid as far as like the VFX stuff, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that you could be working with someone anywhere from $600, $800 to $1,000, $1,500 a day is not unreasonable. Mm-hmm. But I approached people with a flat fee for the production. I approached them and said, hey, first, is this a project that you're interested in? We can offer you this flat fee. And there's a very important component that comes with working with artists when you're talking about a flat fee where there's kind of flexible things is that you got to know that you got to offer them flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Was it fast, cheap, good, pick your two, you know?
Yep.
So we got good and cheap, but not mm-hmm. fast. Right.
And that's typical. That's expected. If you're not going to be paying premium, then like you got to work with their schedules and their timelines and communicate that way ahead of time. We're finding that out too, and talking to some post-production editors, and it's like, you know, we built out into our production timeline that's editing will take its time, and we're okay with that, you know, as long as we get what we're looking for. So I love that you pointed that out, because you just can't have all three if you're not paying top dollar. Yeah. Like, you know, that's just not how it works. But I like the flat fee approach. That is really smart. And that's kind of what we're aiming to do as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it can add up a lot more when it is like a daily rate, you know, like.
Yeah.
And I also, when I was, the whole self-funding thing was really important to Ronan and I. And it was more important to me, honestly, than Ronan. And it was more just like the way I was raised, for better, for worse, you know? But I did think about how, like, eventually I want to do a feature, right? And I wanted to prove myself, you know? So I was like, if I can fund a short and if I can prove to everybody, look at what I'm capable of doing. Like,
right.
I don't know if that's just the way I was raised or a Texan thing or what, but like, hey, you can't just be like, hey guys, like, give me money. Thank you.
And yeah.
I would have gotten some from people, but like, I wouldn't have felt good about it. Mm-hmm. But I had no idea. This is my first thing that I've ever produced. So
congrats to both of you. It looks phenomenal. And just to wrap up the editing, it looks so good. The VFX looks believable. Like mm-hmm. everything, the colors are so great. You're acting. So congrats, because it does look phenomenal for the budget you were working with. It looks so good. And I think to kind of wrap this up, that was going to be, I think my last question to y'all was, what did you see from this project? Where did you see it going? Was it going to be a feature? Or for you, it sounds like it was your way to be like, this is what I can do to prove it to yourself. And then, you know, to make a bigger project and get more investors on and be like, you know, no, I can really do it. Like, see what I've made.
Yeah. I mean, that was Ronan and I's main goal, was just to make something with each other, you know, and to make a great quality film. You know, we just wanted to make something, and we had no idea where it would have gone. And like, we got so lucky connecting with Ben, because, you know, Ben and I spoke about like, this project would have never been made without me, but it also would have never been made without him. You know, like it was very collaborative. We got very lucky as a team working together. But yeah, I wanted to prove myself. I wanted an acting opportunity. Well, I did want to act, and, you know, and I don't know. I still have a bit of a dream of one day, maybe it becomes a feature, but it's not like the forefront of our priorities right now, you know. Met the right investors or team that was like, I love this story, I'd love to expand it. Like, we've already talked about like how we'd want that world to look.
Okay.
But it's not like we're actively pursuing it.
Totally. That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, for me, the challenge was I was interested in telling a longer story. And, you know, as you guys know, the film is like 24 and a half minutes, and that is starting to get into programming death territory, or as we kind of are famously told, like, hey, 7 to 13 minutes is the sweet spot. But we were programmed into 18 festivals. We premiered at the Austin Film Festival.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that was just about like, audiences are used to longer stories now. You know, they're used to mid-length stories, things that dam has been broken a little bit. And I think like, okay, it's like, if we can sustain a narratively driven, dialogue driven story that feels like a little Black Mirror kind of episode of like 25 minutes of television, you know, that's just the challenge I want to take on as we both think about moving forward into making features and tackling longer narrative threads and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I second that, Dee Dee. Like, this was the most collaborative project that I've ever worked on. Truly at every turn, you know, and it's really been such a joy and a delight. It's opened so many little doors, been such a great journey. I'm always looking to learn, and that's why I wanted to get on this project. It's just another opportunity to tackle something different and learn. And I frankly, my best partnerships are with female filmmakers. I don't know what it is. But there is an openness and an ethos and a correctness about an approach that I just don't usually find myself having the same kind of vibe when I partner with other male filmmakers and such like that. So I really enjoyed this collaboration. And then, of course, you know, you're talking about the look of the film. Got a shout out to the editor, Rachel Pearl, she's just a powerhouse editor that really brought something really special to the project, whether it be, you know, the montage moments or just really the care that she gave to all of our performances, you know, as a former actor. So a fabulous process.
We love to hear that.
And we love working with our male partners who just are so supportive of working with female filmmakers and mm-hmm. producers. So Ben, like, thank you for being such a great champion to that and just like giving us the space to talk and share and collaborate, because that's what most of us want to do. It's not about not working with men. We always talk about that on our show because we champion women in this industry. We have men on our team and we're not like, we're female led, and that's what I'm so excited about. We found so many great women to work with, but yeah. Oh my gosh, we have the best male team members, champion mm-hmm. cheerleaders. They're the best. So it's working, I think, all together, that I find is amazing. And it's great to have people who respect you and, yeah. and give you the space to do that, because that's what it's about at the end of the day, is working as a team, collaborating and telling stories. So mm-hmm. I find that to be the best of both worlds. And congrats on making it to so many film festivals. And yeah. I hope you guys continue to do so. Where can our listeners, can they see it yet? Or what are the plans for, you know, them to follow you on social media? Where can our audience find y'all, basically, and the film?
I'm excited to say that we just signed a licensing deal with IFT Network. That is a small startup streaming service. And that just premiered and became available on Valentine's Day.
Love it.
Lone Star Love kind of thing.
Yay.
So we do have a streaming home for the project, and you can sign up for that service, IFT Network, find them on social media. You know, you can keep track of me at Benjamin Lawrence Myers on Instagram. And I also have a project right now that's just starting to hit the festival circuit that is an episodic project. It's a pilot episode.
Nice.
Called Zero Method. It's a time travel action mystery
okay.
project. But Ooh. If anyone has any questions about any of that work or just how to get your project from the page to the screen, definitely reach out to me at Benjamin Lawrence Myers on Instagram. I'd be happy to chat with you.
Love that. Thank you for making yourself available in that way.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And you, my love, Dee Dee, who's being so shy over here.
Well, we know she doesn't use social, but...
yeah.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, I guess, Dee Dee Wauche, Wauche. And I'm trying to think if there's like any way else to contact me besides my email. But yeah, I'm also looking for more projects to collaborate with. I'm fully based in LA at the moment, but I also go back forth to Austin. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just looking to create more art here.
Amazing.
Yay.
Yes.
Well, and congratulations to you all.
Congratulations
on getting that feature off the ground. I look forward to tracking your progress. Best of luck with it. I think that
thank
sounds
you
great.
So much.
Fabulous theme.
Thank
we're
you.
Excited.
And likewise, yeah, I'm like literally like, okay, where I'm stalking y'all. I'm stalking y'all because social media, as we talked. But no, thank you both for sharing your work with us today. What a beautiful collaboration and a great end product. It looks and feels and sounds. It's just so great. I'm so excited for anyone who's listening to go ahead, view it. You won't be disappointed. You'll be inspired, especially if you feel aligned in these topics, as if you, I'm sure you guys, you are tuning in. So you know that we all probably all feel the same on the themes and just the filmmaking experience. So thank you both so much for taking time today to hop on, and we'll definitely be in touch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Femme Regard Podcast. If you like what you hear, tune in every Friday for more tips on the filmmaking business and insightful conversations with industry professionals.
We can only grow with your support, so please subscribe, share, rate, and review. You can also join the Femme Fam on Patreon. For more on us, check us out at femregard.com.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.